Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Ira Weintraub here, along with coaches Jim and Jack Harbaugh. Our director of recruiting, Matt Dudek, is here. Our producer, McKenzie, is here as well. We're going to talk some Michigan football as we're nearly at the halfway point of the season. This week's guest coming up in a little bit, Mel Pearson, third-year head coach of the Michigan hockey team. And, of course, we wrap things up with hashtag Jack Talk later on. A reminder, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen via the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com. And please follow us and contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast or using hashtag Jack Talk.
Last night, Jackie and I, long weekend, great weekend, two great wins. We're watching the football game, and I took out my iPad, and I went through Twitter, and just going through Twitter, and I saw the picture came up of Jim, you know, throwing the ball, and I looked and I watched, and he's throwing the ball, and he kind of threw it. It was a regular sized football. He was tossing it. Jack was catching it. Jack caught it, and then they had a picture behind him. I mean, he cocked that ball up there, dropped, and he fired that thing in there, nice tight spiral. And I want you to know, tears came to my eyes and reflected back to 1994. I was at Western Kentucky University. Jim was playing his first year with the Indianapolis Colts. Last game of the season, the Buffalo Bills. Jim wasn't scheduled to start, and so drove up on a Saturday night, stayed in the hotel. We got up in the morning, had breakfast. Jim drove over to the stadium. I might add, he forgot his notebook in his room at the hotel, and he had to go back and get it, and told me he was going to go back, and I told him I would stay at the stadium. So I walked out on the stadium. I'm sitting on the bench, and stadium is starting to fill up, and the band is practicing and whatever they're doing, and About 45 minutes later, they had three quarterbacks at the time walked out on the field, and they were going to play catch. And the two quarterbacks, Masechowski was one of them, and they started to play a little catch, and Jim didn't have anyone to play catch with. And he called me over. He said, "Dad, would you like to play catch?" So we went out, and we were playing catch back and forth, and flashback to 10 years old, 11 years old, he and John in the front yard here when we were up on Anderson and playing catch. And here we are in the Indianapolis Colts Stadium playing catch with your son. I mean, it was such an emotional experience. Flashback. Here's dad and son playing on this floor of the stadium at the University of Michigan. 7-year-old and his dad and being able to watch it. So a lot of great things happened this weekend. Two great wins. But for me personally, nothing more important than to see that.
We got to win that win that week too. We were playing
Buffalo Bills,
Colts versus the Bills.
Do you remember that? What happened? I'm on the sideline for the game, and I remember things. And I'm not going to mention the quarterback's name, but the starter was in the game and threw an interception or something. And Coach March Broda,
yeah,
he came over and he was such a kind guy, and he went to him, "Son, did you not see the man standing right there when you threw the ball?" "I didn't see him, Coach. I didn't see him." "Well, he was right there." So he came back the next series, be damned if he didn't throw it to the guy again, standing in the same place. "I ask again, did you not see the guy standing there?" He said, "No, I didn't see him again, Coach." He said, "Well, you don't have to worry about it anymore because Jim Harbaugh's going into the game." He brought Jim in, he brought him back, and
we
won the game.
Back. It was a comeback win. And then we got that was a great win Saturday as well. And a lot like John's game, you know, it's one of those character building or character revealing type of games and wins for both the Ravens and Michigan Wolverines. Super proud of our team. They played hard. They played really hard from the first snap to the last. And when you got that, you can get everything else.
The foundation is there.
It shows up. You look at some of the defensive stats. I've been looking at them for a couple of days because they're just really fun to look at. 4 turnovers, 8 sacks out of 13 tackles for loss, 1 yard rushing when you take the sacks out and everything, mm-hmm. but 1 yard rushing in the game. and you look at a team that had only turned the ball over once this season, a team that did not give up a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage, and you guys defensively kind of flipped the script at anything that Iowa had been doing all season.
It was a great great job calling the game by Don Brown, great preparation by the coaches on the defensive side. Sean Newell really has the defensive line playing extremely well. Mike Zordich, corner play was outstanding. Ambry and Vince and Levert really played great. I thought the safeties, Josh Metellus has really got involved, a lot of tackles, and Kalik Hudson had 12 tackles. Jordan Glasgow, there was plays where he was defending the pass, and the next play he's pulling down Stanley, the big quarterback from Iowa. There was Quiddy Pay, 3.5 sacks. Aiden Hutchinson was named the defensive player of the week for the Big Ten. And our defensive player of the week was all starting 11. It was that masterpiece of a performance, and just can't say enough great things about the way the defense has gelled and is playing so hard and playing so good all across the board.
What's the next step in the progression of the offense?
I feel like it's the same. I feel like it's hitting its stride. It's gelling. It was a good first half, productive first half for the offense. We had two drives in the third quarter. One was where we got stopped at midfield. The second drive is where we tried the trick play, got the tackle for the loss, and then sacked on the next play. Shady did a really good job holding on to the ball there. And then we got the ball back in the fourth quarter. Had the really good drive into field goal range, missed the field goal. Then the next drive, we had good field position at the 40-yard line, and then it was a three and out. We missed on a third and three. And then the next drive in the fourth quarter we were about 2 minutes and two and a half minutes, and we got all three of their timeouts to be used, punted the ball away, and then our defensive stop. So I feel like it's gelled. I feel like our guys are playing hard. They're playing good. And my experience in the Iowa games have been the first one to 13 gets the win. 12-10s and 14-12s.
Your senior and redshirt senior year both ended up like
both
that.
Ended on last second field goals. Yeah, my year at Iowa, they beat us on a last second field goal, and then. Then we came back to Michigan. Mike Gillette kicked a game-winning field goal. And then coaching, we lost at Iowa 12. What was it, 14 to 11 or 14-13?
On that last
second field goal by Iowa. And then this year we get the win. So, as I said, I think it's a character-revealing win. Good, tough win for the team. And onward.
Just from my standpoint, where I sit is consistency. There's times that we move the ball. I mean, there are times we gashed. I mean, we're 8 yards at a crack. And other times, we hit a long pass. It's just putting those things together and not allowing something to jump in there that disrupts a drive. You know, like Jim was talking about the trick play. You know, it's one of those things that could have been a touchdown had it had a chance to develop the way you wanted it, but it turned out to be a 9-yard loss. That's a drive stopper, and we just eliminate those and be more consistent.
And also, I'm sure I'll get ridiculed or sarcasm from all the scribes and pundits, but there's also that was a top five defense. I would think was ranked second in the country in defense. I think now they're at fifth in the country in defense. Wisconsin number one. And there's sometimes for, hey, Phil Parker, nice job. They did a defensive coordinator at Iowa, did a very fine job. So did their players.
But now you're on to Illinois. You got the win. Any early thoughts on Illinois as you head into the next game?
Yeah, I mean, our preparation is underway for Illinois, and game planning practice has already begun. And also, we got to look at ourselves too, and we haven't won a road game in the last three attempts, and that'll be a big emphasis, playing our best football in a road Big Ten game.
Hello, football fans. Are you an Amazon Prime member? Did you know that you have Thursday Night Football? That's right. Thursday Night Football has returned to Prime Video for a third season. The cool thing is you can catch all the action on your TV, on the web, or on your mobile anywhere in the world. And the experience is next level. With Prime Video's X-ray feature, you can access next-gen stats, play history, and team information, and it's now available on iOS, Android, Fire tablets, and Fire TV. And if you're ready to hear a new take on the game, you can switch over to broadcast legends Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer for the play-by-play. So if you don't have cable or simply want to experience the football of the future, tune in this Thursday. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern and kickoff is at 8:20 p.m. Eastern. Also available on Fox and NFL Network. NFL Network simulcast subject to change. Thursday Night Football is presented by Bud Light Platinum.
Coming up next, Mel Pearson will join us here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
And now, back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Now time for our guest segment here on Attack Each Day of the Harbaugh's podcast. We bring in from Flin Flon, Manitoba, the head hockey coach for the University of Michigan, Mel Pearson. Mel, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, great, Ira. It's great to be with you. And Flin Flon is actually a place. And if you haven't been there, I suggest you go visit. It's awesome.
Where's it near?
It's near, it's not near anything, coach. That's the problem. But it's about 1,000 miles straight north of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So you just jump in a car and head north and you'll run into it. There's not many roads out of Flin Flon. There's one road in and one road out.
Sounds like Crestline, Ohio, Dad.
Well, we don't have no hockey players in Crestline, Ohio.
But yeah, baseball
players.
There's
never been a hockey player come out of Crestline?
No. We never had ice. I mean, we had
not
ice.
Not even a pond in the backyard?
It was kind of wavy. And it wasn't flat like you need it.
There's been a couple out of Flin Flon, though.
So take us through your story a little bit because, yeah, you're from Flin Flon, Manitoba, but you by the time you went off to Michigan Tech to play college hockey, you had been a lot of places.
A lot of different places. That's what happens when your father is unfortunate for me. I grew up in a family where my dad played pro hockey. So born in Vancouver, B.C., that was my dad's first spot, but also lived in New York, Buffalo, Baltimore, L.A., Portland, Oregon, Minneapolis, St. Paul twice. Trois-Rivières, Quebec, lived there. That was an interesting year. And then also Kitchener, Ontario. So my dad was a minor league player, got to see a lot of the different places, a lot of North America, but it was great. It was great. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And obviously, we'd always go back to Flin Flon, Manitoba in the summer. And, you know, both my grandfathers were miners, worked underground in Hudson Bay Mining and Smelting Company. So, but it's been awesome. I got to play high school hockey in Minnesota. That was my last stop before college. And I think I was destined to come to Michigan because my high school coach was Willard Eichola. Willard Eichola was an All-American goalie at Michigan, was an Olympian, and he's arguably the best high school coach ever in the state of Minnesota. So I got to play for Willard. So it's interesting I didn't end up here as a player, but I followed another Michigan guy. John McGinnis was my college head coach at Michigan Tech, and John McGinnis was a Michigan grad and goalie here. So it's just a matter of time before I ended up at Michigan somehow, some way.
Now, your dad, George, was a big guy. Was he one of those enforcers? Did you ever, ever see him get in a fight?
Well, I got a picture of him in a book where he's actually, back in the day, they had they didn't have the glass. They had sort of the chicken wire, the screen. And he's actually climbing up the chicken wire to try to get to the goal judge because he made a bad call. So, yeah, my dad was known to mix it up a little bit, but if I could skate like him, I'd probably still be playing. He's a great skater, obviously, was a little bit of a goal scorer in junior hockey, but had a nice career as a minor league hockey player, and like I said, I got to hang around that and be in the locker rooms and all that, and I guess that's how I got to where I am now and got involved in the sport.
I love that picture of Red and your dad in the playing. What all-star team was that?
Yeah, that was the Saskatchewan Junior League all-star team. I think it was in 1939. They were playing in Humboldt, Saskatchewan. So I never realized that Red and my dad had played on this all-star team together. So there's another link to Michigan and Michigan hockey. But I was going through some of my dad's thing after he passed, and I was looking at a picture, and I go, that's Red. That's Red Berenson, and then I go, my dad's in this picture, and
and neither of them ever talked about the other.
No, they never. You know, I knew they had known each other, but they had never really told me that they played in some of these things together. So it was pretty neat. And when I look back, and you know, now I'm Michigan, and you know, Red, there was a connection back there in 1939. So it's pretty awesome.
Are you a George as well?
No, I'm a Melvin Kim. So my dad's actual name was George Melvin Alexander Pearson. So he went by the same name as Mel, actually. So that's how I got my name, Mel, after my father.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. Coach Mel he's right up there at the very top of my favorite coaches here at Michigan. He's a great guy. We always sit next to each other in the Ward's athletic department head coaches meeting.
He hasn't separated you guys yet?
No, we always find each other. I like having Mel to my right and Mike Bottom to my left. Yeah. And,
it's a good group.
We take up the back row there.
We don't have assigned seats? You don't have a seat with your name on it where you have to sit?
No, there's not assigned seats. And we don't get called on very often.
No, we don't. Ward knows better. So just leave us alone. But anyway, also bought this great picture over today that I've had in my office of a hockey team from Bowling Green, Ohio. And I see these two names here, obviously John and Jim Harbaugh. They look like they're pretty good players. So I'm just fortunate that Jim stuck with football. Else I might not be here. He might be the hockey coach here at Michigan. So I'm glad it worked out like it did for Jim, obviously, and myself.
Great. Playing youth hockey was one of the great experiences of my life. This particular team, I was 6, and I think John was 7.5, and just turned 6. And it's the first team I was ever on. We were the Bruins.
Yeah.
And didn't know how to skate. Had never skated, but they had a hockey league. That was the only sport you could sign up for in Bowling Green at that time. I don't know if you know that, Dad, but we played. And it was, you just played a slice of the ice.
Yeah.
It seemed really long. You played sideways.
Sideways,
they had wood to separate.
They had the wood beams.
Yeah. They do some of that now, actually, with youth hockey. They've gone to smaller surfaces so the kids get to touch the puck more and just not chasing it over the ice.
It was the greatest thing, though, as a kid to play a sport where there was equipment. Yeah, that you just loved having the equipment.
Didn't we put books for shin guards? I mean, we couldn't afford a shin guards, if I remember. We had to get you little magazines. Jack Vivian, you remember?
Oh, Jack Vivian, yeah.
He was the first coach, I think, at Bowling Green when Jim was playing
the
youth program there.
Yeah, Jack started there and then eventually ended up here at Michigan.
And then Jerry York was at Bowling Green as well.
Jerry York was at Bowling Green. The all-time leading NCAA victory coach is Jerry York. He's still at Boston College, still coaching.
They were one of the first programs to build an ice arena there on the campus. Yeah. And I remember they started that program when I was there back in 1967, 68, somewhere back in there.
Yeah. But that's a great pitcher. Like you can tell he's an athlete in the pitcher. He's probably his leading scorer on the team that year.
How can you tell that? Show me what you see there.
I can just tell he's standing up.
Nice and tall.
Tall, twinkle in his eye. He was probably one of those guys that I remember, like, you know, if I had a game at 7 in the morning that I would get up at or sleep in my equipment.
Yeah, that's him.
And I'm sure Jim is the same way. You sleep in your equipment, and then you can't wait to get to the rink in the morning.
Yeah, and all those kids were like 2 or 3 years older. You know, John was 15 months older. I don't know how I got able to play. I think with the December 23rd birthday, I just got old enough by the January sign up to be on the 6-9 team or something like that.
Well, it's obviously you made a wise choice.
Played hockey here in Ann Arbor in the junior leagues. How are the junior leagues in Ann Arbor now?
You know, good. It's come a long way. They've got some good players, some kids who go Division I. Obviously, we're sitting here with Mackenzie today and her brother, Ian Cole.
Ian Cole came
out of here, the local program, Stanley Cup champion. So we should have came to Michigan, but that's another story. we've discussed that. But, yeah, it's good. And what you need, I think, is you need the ice time, and obviously with the addition of the ice cube and more rinks here, it's really helped the youth, and also good coaching. And we see a lot of former players, whether it's Drew Denzen or, you know, the Helvers or people that have come back to coach and coach their kids and other players, and that's really helped. So the ice time and then the coaching is critical to help these young people and help them get to the next level.
Yeah, we got a little ice hockey story that – Ooh. John and I were involved in. We got
a car accident.
We got a car. Oh. We got in a car accident on the way to the hockey game. I'll let Dad tell it. But we got dropped off. Dad was working. It was a Sunday morning. Yeah. We had like a 7:30 game. or it might have been an 8 a.m. game. Could have been 6:30. Who knows? But we get dropped off. We walk in, John and I. We're in our full equipment. We had the, even had our skates on. With the rubber.
We thought the game was at Yost.
We thought the game was at Yost. We walked into Yost, and there's our team is not at Yost. You guys are over at Vets. So John and I walk from Yost over to my dad's office, where Ward's office is now, mm-hmm. on the corner there of State and Hoover. Yeah. And the door was locked. So we threw a couple pebbles up at the window of Dad's office, and he opened. What the hell? He goes, the game's at Vets. The game's at Vets. We need a ride to Vets. I'll be right down. I'll be right down.
I didn't have a car. Jackie had dropped us off, and I didn't have a car. So Chuck Stobart was here playing. One of our assistants was mm-hmm. playing handball.
Yeah.
So I knew he was in the handball car. I said, Chuck, can I borrow your car? He said, sure. He threw the keys up. We ran out, got in the car. They're in the back seat, all padded up. Didn't have a helmet on, but all padded up. They had their sticks.
Ready to go.
We're going. We go down Hoover, and then we go to
Pauline.
We're over Pauline. We're driving down the road, and tip-off time's in 5 minutes, so we got to get them there. We come over the hill. Oh, my goodness. There's a car pulling out. A Briarwood, I think it was the name of the street.
And it was like late fall, so there's some wet leaves that were
hit the brakes and start to slide. And I'm going, nothing you could do. He spins one. I'm going the other way. The radiator blows up, spitting steam and all that. You're all right. Okay, I better go out and see if. So the guy's all right, and he has his son in the back seat. And you're going too fast. So we don't need to talk about that now. We just make sure that all the kids are safe and healthy. That's the most important thing right now. Is your son all right? He said he is. You're all right. So everything's okay. Then I ran back to the car. He said, come on, get out of the car. And so there was a lady had pulled up behind us because the traffic was stopped. I said, ma'am.
He's out there.
Flagging the car.
Ma'am, hey, waving his arm.
You got to get to the game, man. You got to get to the game.
I've just had a car accident. These two boys need to get to Vets Ice Arena. You know where Vets Ice Arena is?
Jump in the back seat, boys.
You mind giving them a ride to Vets?
It could have been Jack the Ripper.
I want to know, did you win the game?
We got there. The game had already started, so they didn't let us play for the first period. But then
penalized accident.
Yeah, we had to stay out the entire first period, and then we both got in for the second period.
Well, at least you made it. That's great. That reminds me of a story. I was with Red, and we went recruiting trip when I was an assistant, and I was driving. And so, okay, Red, the game's in Stratford, Ontario. Okay, so we're booking it up to Stratford, and we pull into the parking lot of the rink in Stratford, Ontario, probably about 45 minutes before the game. No cars in the parking lot. Rink looks totally black. Walk in, and, hey, no game here tonight. It's in, I don't know, Kitchener or somewhere like that. And, of course, Red gives me the stare like,
oh, yeah, assistant. What are you doing?
What are you doing? I mean, you're my assistant. You don't even know where the game is? that's my car story.
Were you able to make it to the game?
We did. And I can't remember who the recruit was, but I think everything went good. And Red kept me on staff for a few years after that. So all was good.
We here at Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, have a message for you about how to eat a little bit better. And I think Matt Dudek knows what we're about to talk about.
The Butcher Box.
That's right, Matt. We are here to talk about Butcher Box, which makes it easy to eat high-quality, humanely raised meat that you can trust.
Delicious, organic, free-range meats.
Every month, Butcher Box delivers 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild Alaskan salmon directly to your door, and shipping is free.
I've never had a day of medical training in my life. But I can't speak to the fact, if you do not eat, you will die.
So why not eat the finest meats?
Might as well eat the finest meat. They're going to be delivered right to your doorstep.
Right to your doorstep.
Because if you don't eat, you will perish.
That's science.
So we've established that you have to eat, but do you always want to go grocery shopping, or would you rather have really good food just sent right to you? I think that we'd rather have it just sent right to you, and that's exactly what we did.
We got them mailed. Butcher Box sent us
the pork chop. It was very good.
It was, and thick. Thick pork chops, thick steaks. One thing that people worry about when they get mail order food is, Will it stay? I'm at work all day. Will it stay cold on my front porch? Well, I can tell you, I had one mailed to my house for Coach. It stayed on my front porch for 9 hours. When I got it, everything was still frozen. It was a hot day here in Michigan. They have it packed up really nice in a great box.
So what comes in that box? 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork that's old world pork before they bred out all the fat and flavor to make it the other white meat. They also have wild-caught Alaskan sockeye salmon, and ButcherBox bacon is sourced from heritage breed pigs and is uncurated, nitrate-free, and sugar-free.
That was thick bacon.
And how about this offer if you sign up right now? New subscribers will receive ground beef for life. That's right. Sign up today, and ButcherBox will send you 2 pounds of 100% grass-fed, grass-finished beef free in every box for the life of your subscription. Plus, listeners will get an additional $20 off their first box, and this is a limited-time offer. So go to butcherbox.com/attack or enter promo code ATTACK at checkout.
There's no better promo code than ATTACK. How about that one?
So once again, for 2 pounds of 100% grass-fed beef free in every box for the life of your subscription, plus $20 off your first box, go to butcherbox.com/attack or enter promo code ATTACK at checkout.
Speaking of being kept on staff by Red, take us to the story of your interview process coming here, interviewing with the athletic director at the time, Bo Schembechler.
You talk about intimidated, and you know, Red had the name, and I remember his interview in 1988 for an assistant coaching job here, and you know, it was tough enough just sitting with Red, and just, you know, he gives you that glare and gives you those questions, and it makes you a little nervous. And then he says, okay, we're going upstairs to meet the athletic director. Like, and I knew who the athletic director was. Bo Schembechler, who was coaching football at the time and was the AD. And I knew who Bo was. I followed Michigan football. And so I was, needless to say, extremely nervous. So when I went in that office, and there's Bo sitting behind his desk, and you got Red on one side and Bo on the other side, just looking at you, and they didn't say too much when I first sat down. Like, they're just eyeing you up, you know, both of them. And then Bo goes, yeah, well, you know, Pearson, you know, what do you want this job for? And I'm going, it's the only time I think I had to go and change my underwear after an interview. I mean, it was awesome, though, to sit in the office with those two legends and just listen to them go back and forth after a while. And then Bo says, well, you're good enough for that guy. You're good enough for me. Welcome to Michigan. So,
well, you got him cold. You had him absolutely cold.
Well, it was an intimidating day, but a great day for me. And that started it all and started my Michigan career. And I'm just so excited I'm back here. It's a great place. And you know, all three of my kids went to Michigan. It's been awesome. So,
well, tell us about your team.
I like our team. We know we had a tough year last year. You know, we were expected to finish higher than we did, and we didn't. And I'm not going to make excuses. We didn't get the job done. This year, we're not picked as high, and which is a good thing. You know, we're the hunter right now. We're not being hunted. So, but I like our team. We've got a lot of good players up front. We've got a couple high end draft picks. It's, you know, Jim and I have talked about this before. Our guys get drafted before they even come into college. So we've got two first round NHL draft picks and a kid named Cam York. He was the 14th pick overall in the draft by the Philadelphia Flyers. Then we got Johnny Beecher, who's drafted by the Boston Bruins, 30th overall. But what's going to, you know, make our team or lead our team to success is our seniors. We got a great a crew of seniors. We actually have 9 seniors this year on our team, led by Will Lockwood, who's our 100th captain in Michigan hockey history. Wow. And Will's a legacy player. His dad played for Michigan, and Will's already been drafted by Vancouver. I'm so excited Will came back. Vancouver Canucks have drafted him. They tried to pull him out of here this summer. They offered him a contract, but Will decided to come back and be our captain and get his degree and then go out to the pro hockey world. But I like our team. Our goaltending is the area that we have to. It's sort of like quarterback in football. It's, you know, everybody's looking at your goalies, and they had an off year last year, but we feel they're both very capable of being much, much better. And we've already seen that. Yesterday we had our first exhibition game, and Straussman did a great job. He's a sophomore, didn't let any goals in. He went to the New York Islanders development camp this summer. I think that was really good for him, just seeing what it takes to play at the next level, and I think he's poised to have a real good year. And then Hayden Levine's our senior goalie. He took us to the Frozen Four 2 years ago, had a tremendous year. And then last year he thought it was going to be easy. You know, he just didn't work as hard, in my opinion. And but now he's back in the saddle, and he looks good, and he's recommitted himself to the game. So, and his conditioning and everything. So we're going to have a good competition there in net. But I really like our team. So
it kind of sounds like, you know, the senior class that you have, and then how many new freshmen do you have?
Yeah, we've got nine new freshmen. So it's we're feast and famine. We got all these seniors and all these young players. But in our sport, as you know, Jack and Jim, and we can bring 20-year-old freshmen in. So we've got some older guys, but we also have some 18-year-old freshmen. And we bring our guys in, and they play. Very rarely do we redshirt a player. So they've got to come in and be able to perform right from day one. But we need our seniors to lead and help them along, especially early in the year. And our seniors have done a great job of that so far.
What about the coaching staff? You lost one of your coaches to the NHL as Coach Wiseman leaves, bringing a guy from the East Coast. Plus, you have a couple of names that we're really familiar with on your staff, with Steve Shields, and now Matt Hunwick is back. Take us through the additions and changes there.
Got the best staff in college hockey, Ira, the best staff. So Brian Wiseman did a great job, and anytime you have good people around you, they're going to have opportunities to leave. And Brian had an opportunity to go to Edmonton, the NHL, to work with Dave Tippett, who he'd worked for before. So very happy for Brian. Brian did a great job. 8 years here at Michigan, did a fabulous job, but it gave us the opportunity to reevaluate our staff and make some changes. And change sometimes is hard, but in this situation, I think it was a good thing. We were forced into it, and we brought Chris Mayotte from Providence. He's a goalie guy, penalty-killing guy, and that's the area we really need some help. So Chris has done a great job so far, and we were fortunate to be able to bring Matt Hunwick on as our volunteer assistant. Matt, unfortunately, his career ended this year. He still has a year left on his contract with the Buffalo Sabres, but they told him, you know, you're done. Don't play. So after 500 and some odd games in the National Hockey League, Matt's come on board as our volunteer assistant coach. How about that? You get a guy with that experience come on, and you don't have to pay him a nickel. Sorry, Matt, if you're listening to this, but he's great. He's such a, you know, he's a good player. He's a great player, but he's an unbelievable person. He's going to be so good for all of our young players, especially our defensemen, because that's the position he played. So All-American here at Michigan, we're so happy to have him. And then Steve Shields, we were able to move into a coach's assistant role, not an assistant coach, but sort of a program assistant, and he'll do a good job for us. So I've got a great staff, and then obviously Billy McCult's the holdover, and Billy's a great Michigan guy, won a couple national championships here, so he's doing a fantastic job. So anxious, excited to get the season underway. We start Friday with Clarkson. They're a top 10 team in the country, so let's drop the puck and let's get after.
Any volunteer coach should be paying you to
That's a good idea. I'm going to tell Maddie, hey, by the way,
we have a suggestion from Jim Harbaugh.
From Coach Harbaugh. We can't pay you, but for the opportunity to be at Michigan, to come back, absolutely.
Don Canham had that philosophy. You're at Michigan. Yeah. Why are we paying you? You should really be coming. I mean, you're a full-time assistant. He was suggesting that maybe you should pay him to come to the University of Michigan.
That's a great idea.
Al Davis told me that. When I played my first job was with my dad as a volunteer assistant, which I should have been paying you for. And then my second job as a coach was working for the Oakland Raiders.
Sure, with Al.
And I knew not to ask him when he hired me what my salary was going to be. And I never brought it up. And then he said, and if you're thinking about asking me what we're going to pay you, don't, because you should be paying us.
Al Davis. Well, he's a little bit ahead of his time back in the days. Yeah. Good football guy, but that's a great one. I'll bring that up with Matt Hunwick.
I
like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they'll be happy to hear that Jim had that suggestion.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Maddie, we'll see you Tuesday, Matt.
So, Coach, you get fall camp, you get 4 weeks to practice. Basketball, they're already practicing. They get over a month to get ready for their season. Mm-hmm. How much time, full time of practice, do you get before your first game?
We get 4 hours. Well, now this week we finally get to 20 hours. But up until this past Saturday, and we played an exhibition game Sunday, we had 4 hours per week. And it's just – our coaches association, we're not as organized as football and basketball and some other sports. So it's ridiculous. We go from trying to do so many things, especially with so many new players and systems and whatnot. You get 4 hours. So you find yourself just, you're not doing as much coaching. You're just trying to get through the systems and the drills and trying to maximize that hour you have 4 times a week. And then bang, you got to play. But fortunately, this week we're back to 20 hours. But last year, our first official day of 20 hours, we played that night.
Oh, right.
We don't do it right. But the problem is we're trying to cram all our games in, so we can't shove those games back 2 weeks. We've got to try to get right from our first day play. Like this weekend, teams played on Saturday, and they were.
So why not get into practice time in starting in early September?
Because our coaches association isn't organized like some other ones. We're trying to do that and trying to say, hey, let's give us 2 weeks before the official start date at least to get 20 hours. Because our players are here. They want to be on the ice. They're on the ice anyway, so they go out on captain's practice, but then they get in some bad habits, and it's not as intense as you'd like, but we have to get there. We might have to hire you and get you to work the coaches association.
That's like you having your guys run player 7-on-7s until game week. That would be the equivalent.
Well, basically,
you'd go into your first game week. You'd have no fall camp. You would have players doing, like, you know, linemen, I guess, coaching each other up with technique drills and the quarterbacks coordinating 7-on-7s, and then you, boom, start game week with no fall camp. Mm.
Good luck. Yeah, it's not the perfect scenario, but
are there exhibition games? Those starting games, are they?
Well, we played yesterday an exhibition game, and that's the first one. But sometimes, like I said, some teams they're playing games that go in your standings and go towards your RPI and everything. So next week, it's our first week of 20 hours a week, and bang, we're playing the top 10 team in the country, and we got to be ready. Now everybody has the same rules, but so it's not. Yeah, we're hockey coaches. We're a little odd anyway, you know.
Hello, this is Jim Harbaugh from the AED Podcast, telling you that when my wife shops for jewelry, she goes to Lewis Jewelers.
Lewis Jewelers, been in Ann Arbor 3 generations. David, the owner, great guy. Designer watches, designer jewelry, like tag watches. Did you ever get a watch, Coach?
No, my wife doesn't shop for me at Lewis Jewelers. She shops for herself.
And I would imagine because it is no commission, very informal. You walk in, they're not tuxedos and ball gowns where they're trying to jam something down your throat. Sarah gets to walk in, look around, they help her, they're very accommodating. Keith and Lucinda, awesome there. But maybe next time we can give Sarah a nudge and maybe you can get yourself a new watch.
She does like to shop. Lewis Jewelers is great for Sarah. And they're a proud sponsor of the AED Podcast.
Absolutely, and they're very big supporters of Michigan. You know who else shops at Lewis Jewelers? Your assistant, Deanna. She loves going over there, very knowledgeable. She's got a beautiful pair of earrings a couple weeks ago.
You know who else shops at Lewis Jewelers?
Who's that?
Matt Dudek.
Absolutely.
Bought his wife, Lindsay, a very nice pair of earrings. $5,000 is the rumor. And also Ira has his wedding ring from Lewis Jewelers.
Yeah, my wedding ring, my wife's wedding band, her engagement ring. My wife has a Movado watch that we got at Lewis Jewelers. Online at lewisjewelers.com.
Lewis Jewelers, proud supporter of the AED Podcast at Michigan Athletics. Go Blue.
What do your players do in the summertime? Do they go into programs outside the program, you know, like travel type programs or anything?
Yeah, not really, Jack. What they try to do is almost all of our players have their individual trainers now.
Oh, okay.
So we try to keep them around in May and June, which we do. So they're all here on campus spring term. And then because of pro camps and that, we don't keep them here summer because I think we had 18 guys go to NHL development camps, and they're usually in July. And then there's a World Junior camp. So we've got all these camps that these kids go to. So it's hard for us to keep them here in the summer. But a lot of them stay around. But they don't play in really any outside leagues or
But when they're in the camps, they play games there and
yeah, maybe for a week or so practice and some games. But it's not high intensity. It's just so the pro teams can get a feel how the guy. It's crazy. Guys are still in college, and they're going to these pro camps already. Yeah. And then they come back to us, and they got one foot
really
out the door. And yeah, it is what it is. It's been that way forever. So,
so what are the rules if the players are drafted by the NHL and they have their rights?
Yep.
What are they paid by the NHL club? Do they have a signing bonus? How does it work?
Great question. So until they actually sign a contract, they're not compensated. So they go to these camps and these teams just sort of monitor their progress here. And then at some point, like Quinn Hughes last year was a first-round draft pick for us. So after our year, he was a sophomore. So right after our year was done in Minnesota, he signed the next day. So we were done in March, and then I guess 2 weeks later, he was playing for Vancouver. So he goes wow. right from our team to playing. But they're not compensated. They retain their rights through the end of their senior year, August of their senior year. So, but we have, with the collective bargaining agreement, teams will try to sign those guys before that date because they become a free agent. They run out. So you'll see the NHL teams are trying to sign our guys before they get to their senior year. So it's all out of whack. It's not the greatest system, but it is what we have in place, and we just have to try to manage that.
But it's only one team negotiating with them.
Correct.
Right.
So that's
not,
it.
So not,
we don't have to worry unless we have a free agent on our team who hasn't been drafted yeah. before he's 20, which we have some. Then you get 32 teams after him, and that's a lot of fun. Yeah. So then they're, you know, we're trying to get them to focus on Iowa, for example, and then, you know, Philly's calling up, hey, we're coming in this weekend to see you, have a good weekend, who's a coach got you playing with, has he got you on the power play, all this stuff, and we're trying to coach them, and wow. but that's the outside noise and the outside distractions that you try to minimize. And when you're a place like Michigan, you are going to get top players like mm-hmm. that. So it's just trying to manage your roster. It's some days it's more frustrating than others, but at the same time, you have to understand what's going on and just, I don't want to say put up with it, but just deal with it.
Just a quick thing. Back in the 70s, we were here from 73 to 79 yeah. in the games over there at Yost. And,
yeah.
and Donnie Dufek, strong safety, was on the hockey. There's not a better spectator sport than to be into that arena mm-hmm. and watch a hockey game. If there are fans out there, Michigan fans, or just hockey, just sport fans that yeah. haven't experienced that, they need to get into Yost Arena and experience that.
Well, it's obviously I'm a little prejudiced, but it's a fast moving sport. There's something going on. I like the physicality of it. That's, you know, it's similar to football. You need some tough. You got to play gritty. You have to show up and play and be able to hit. And the thing is, you're trying to handle a puck while some guy's running at you, trying to put you through the board. So, but it's become a fast game, and that's where our sport is headed, whether NHL or in college. It's speed and the physicality and the excitement. And in Yost, there's not a bad seat, so you get the band there. I've been, North Dakota has $100 million building they just put up. Notre Dame just put a new building. Penn State, yeah. Pagula just put $100 million into the program down there. But I'm telling you can go to any of those places, but on game night, yeah. there's nothing like Yost, and I've been to them all. You come into Yost Ice Arena, as soon as you walk in, those old doors of that building that was erected in 1922, the smell of the popcorn and the ice and the, I mean, that's giving me goosebumps right now. But anyway, it's you're right. It's a great place to go, and one of these days I'm going to be able to sit in there as a fan and watch it. But
and
it's
just
a great
like
place.
Bo would say, you see that nail up there? Yost hung his hat on that particular nail. You're not going to find a nail in Yost that Yost actually did hang his hat on.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because when I came here in 1977, the visitors' locker room, there weren't lockers like there are now. There were just nails. And it was mm-hmm. crazy, but I'm sure it was
the
just the way it was upstairs there. And our locker room still upstairs. It's been redone. But, that building is iconic. I mean, whether you had track in there, football yeah. practice in there, basketball, played in there, it's yeah. It's a great building. I'm glad we're not worried about building a new building and all this other stuff, because on game night it's awesome. It's great.
And I don't know when you do this, but please advertise this. Last year we were at a game and the band came out in street shoes
yeah.
and marched and formed a Block M
yeah.
and sang and played the fight song.
Yeah.
Maybe the most athletic yeah. thing that I've seen in years for them. Not one band member went down.
Well, I know there's 100 and they audition for the band. I think that's one of the things. They have to be able to skate or at least walk on ice. So, but the band, it adds to the whole atmosphere. It adds to the college atmosphere, and I still feel we have that. Sure, we have some pumped-in music. I mean, you know, we have to keep all the millennials and all these young kids into it, but it's awesome. The There's nothing like the band at Yost.
Yeah, the children at Yost do a great job.
The children at Yost, the student section. Yeah, we have to cut off tickets for students. You know, we're limited, but it's 1,200, and we have a waiting list for students to get in. So it's awesome.
And when did Yost become an ice arena and not the football indoor practice facility? Because I remember, I vaguely remember, being 1973, coming to Michigan, and then they said they used to have football practices in Yost.
Yeah, I think 74 is when it became the ice.
So that would have been we'd have been here 1 year.
Yeah. In spring practice.
It was configured differently, if I remember. It was configured like the old basketball arena was.
Yeah.
And then they changed it. Then they remodeled at some point in time.
They just really took everything out that was on the inside and erected some. Yeah, but the outside has been the same, and we're trying to add some things in the rink now. We need to add player amenities, as Jim knows. It's an ongoing thing, so we have to update some of the amenities, but we're running out of room, so I don't know if we're gonna go back or down or try to figure something out. But you don't want to touch a game night thing. It's awesome.
Don't touch any nails in a wall.
No, I'm not touching any nails. In fact, I'm gonna go over there today and start looking for them. But they used to have on the one wall is where the track was, where the 100-yard dead, the starting thing on the old bricks painted on there. So it's and what a name, Yost Ice Arena. Yeah. I mean, just it's a beautiful building.
Yeah. I got to tell you a story. Probably 9 or 10, maybe 11, sitting in the north end zone at Yost.
Yeah.
And it was a hockey game. The underneath of that, there was a stands, and then underneath was something. You could go down there underneath those stands, and I would, every game, I would go down there and, see if stuff was down there. You know, sometimes there'd be a puck. Sometimes there'd be something, just things to collect, some pens or
popcorn boxes,
programs. Everything.
Program always would go down and get a program because I didn't buy my own program. there was a game that I went down there and there was a wad of money. A bunch of bills, fives, tens, twenties, was down there, and I saw it. Eyes got huge. Picked it up and put it in my pocket.
Wait a minute.
Kind of looked up and said, that might have fallen out of somebody's pocket, And I put it in my pocket. I walked around the concourse 2 times, and then the guilt got me.
And I trained him well, Jack. Trained him well.
I've never heard this story. I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat. What did you do with it?
Cross my heart, hope to die. I went up. There was a group of about 3 or 4 people that were in that area where it could have fallen down. And I asked if anybody had lost any money. And guy looked in his wallet and obviously it was his. So I said, I found this underneath the...
Mother is so proud right now.
Trained
the training
well.
Has proven.
Yeah.
And the gentleman gave me a $20 bill. But there was 200 nice. Plus.
Wow.
That was
big money.
Gave me a comp of it and gave me $20.
Wow,
that's awesome! Hey, Yost Ice Arena, that's a good story. I'm gonna be walking on there today. I'm gonna go back
is that still under the north end zone? Can you get down there? Can you get down there and find stuff?
Well, they have temporary bleachers now, so when they pull them out on game night, you can sneak out there. So if you see me leaving the bench in a timeout, you know where I went. I'm under the bleachers.
Yeah, kind of scouting around.
I can't remember how I used to get down there. I'm sure I just crawled.
Yeah, well, they had some temporary.
One of the seats and just kind of crawled through the.
It's redone now. They sort of put more permanent in there than when they had the reconstruction maybe about 7 years ago. So.
My heart's throbbing right now. I can't wait to get home and tell your mother. You will never know how proud she is.
I told you when it happened. I told you.
I do not recall.
I did tell you. I did tell you.
I must say I do not recall.
Mel, appreciate your time. Good luck this season. And, of course, we'll be following and enjoying the games at Yost. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Iron.
Thanks to Jack
and Jim. It's great to be here. And I was at the Iowa game this weekend. And, that's a good win. That's a good win. Every win's a good win right now. And we're positioned in a great spot. So I can't wait. So I love getting over there. I wish I could be more involved and understand what's going on, but someday.
Do you have recruits over there?
We didn't this weekend, but our first one, we only had 20 there, Jim, so the first game of the year. But we love it. I mean, we love bringing our kids over there. They love to come to the football games. They like the hockey games, but they just love going to the football games. So
it was a great weekend. It was a great Ann Arbor football weekend.
Yeah. Homecoming, parents.
People said were all in the downtown area and
it was jammed. Yeah, it was. Ann Arbor was hopping this weekend.
Oh, it was awesome. Maria Shriver was here. I mean, well, you know, a lot
Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, Condoleezza Rice is the, honorary captain. Yeah,
it was. She did a great job, by the way, talking to the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just awesome. I just love football weekends.
Yeah. Thank you, Mel. Well, we love hockey. We're
go
excited.
Go get them, Mel.
You're invited over anytime, guys.
We'll be there, I promise you.
Okay, well, good luck, guys.
Thank you.
You too.
Hello, football fans. Are you an Amazon Prime member? Did you know that you have Thursday Night Football? That's right. Thursday Night Football has returned to Prime Video for a third season. The cool thing is you can catch all the action on your TV, on the web, or on your mobile anywhere in the world. And the experience is next level. With Prime Video's X-ray feature, you can access next-gen stats, play history, and team information, and it's now available on iOS, Android, Fire tablets, and Fire TV. And if you're ready to hear a new take on the game, you can switch over to broadcast legends Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer for the play-by-play. So if you don't have cable or simply want to experience the football of the future, tune in this Thursday. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern and kickoff is at 8:20 p.m. Eastern. Also available on Fox and NFL Network. NFL Network simulcast subject to change. Thursday Night Football is presented by Bud Light Platinum.
Coming up next, Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
From all of us here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, as always, a big thank you for listening to the show. Now we'd like to ask a small but very important favor of you. It'll only take a few minutes, and if you're one of the first people to do it, Podcast One will make it worth your time, literally. We need you to complete a short survey because the information you give us can help make things better for the show and you as a listener. Just go to podcastone.com/survey and everything will be right there for you. That's podcastone.com/survey. The first 250 people who complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to Amazon.com. And two grand prize winners will be selected at random to get a $100 Amazon gift card. How about that? Free money. It's a win-win. Our shows are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will really help us cater to needs of you as a listener. So please go to podcastone.com/survey, answer some questions potentially make some money along the way. Thank you for being a dedicated listener.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
It's now time for everybody's favorite segment of the week, Jack Talk, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. And Jack, before we get into how Jack knows a movie star, I want to read a tweet from last week's show. We tweeted out part of your meeting Eleanor Roosevelt. Was during Jack Talk, you took us on your trip from the mid-50s through the East Coast. So we tweeted the question out, when is the time that you were in the presence of someone famous and didn't realize it? And we got one from your old friend Todd Hamilton. He responded back, and he said, when I was doing Western Kentucky baseball years ago in Jacksonville, Florida, a gentleman sat near me and was listening to my call. During a commercial break, he came and introduced himself. He was former MLB commissioner Bowie Kuhn.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that a great story? You would love Todd Hamilton. He is a broadcaster, did all the Western Kentucky baseball games and had his own talk show, and just a nice guy, and a friend of ours, a great friend of ours.
And we also got a tweet in from Dave, who, your face is my case, is his Twitter handle. He said, my buddy was at a high school playoff game sitting next to this quote-unquote older dude. My buddy was giving his view of the game. Nice guy. I'm seen to know football. It was 40-year legendary high school coach Roger Schiavarini of the Muskegon Big Reds. And so his buddy's telling this guy all about what he's seeing, and the guy, Roger's probably just going, yep, okay.
Very, very politely offering his expertise.
Yeah, didn't know who he was. So some fun takes after you had inadvertently.
We had anyone that had been on the trip. I mean, had been on the Odd Fellows.
Haven't heard anybody had heard back yet, but we're still efforting.
I followed up on that. They still have those.
They still do the trip.
They still do the trips to the United Nations, and it's pretty much the format that they had back in the 50s. So hats off and kudos to that
outstanding group.
That is pretty cool. So after a couple of close wins by the Harbaughs this weekend, we take a deep breath on this Monday for Jack Talk as we record the segment. And we go back in time to your time at Bowling Green, and you tie us into a movie star. And for those that are listening that know the movies Revenge of the Nerds, UN Washington was your teammate in college.
Interesting story. Jackie and I were watching TV, and we have this Roku where you can go off and get it was Amazon, and we just saw this movie, Sidney Poitier, and that's all we knew. And the movie was called Simple Life of Noah Dearborn. That was the movie, and that drew us in with Sidney Poitier. So started to watch, and Sidney Poitier was the featured star, but his uncle was Uncle Silas, and that was Bernie Casey. Back in 1957, when we went to Bowling Green, Jackie and I were freshmen. Bernie was a freshman. He was out of Columbus East High School, tall, rangy guy, about 6'2", 6'3", weighed about 160 pounds. They later found out that he had some problems with an infected tooth that was affecting his growth spurt. Hmm. Got to Bowling Green. They found that out, corrected it, and he grew into a 6'4", about a 215-pound running back, fast as lightning. In 1960, he was a high hurdler at Bowling Green, won three consecutive Mid-American Conference championships, tried out for the Olympics, went to the finals, and finished fourth in the high hurdles, and they took three, so he missed it by one. But he was the number one draft choice of the San Francisco 49ers, and I think it was a sixth or seventh pick in the first round in 1961, played there for 5 or 6 years, had an outstanding career. He had 359 receptions, 5,444 yards, and 40 touchdowns in his career. The last 2 years, he was traded to the Los Angeles Rams. They went into the playoffs with him as one of the receivers. Roman Gabriel was the quarterback, and they had a good team, and they caught up with him as an actor. They brought him into the acting community, and that skyrocketed. Some of the things that he played in, number one, the Revenge of the Nerds, which I have not seen. I have no need or want to see it, but I guess he played a superintendent at the school.
He played the guy who ran the national fraternity that the nerds joined their fraternity. It was an all-black fraternity, but they accepted him. He was the head of it, UN Washington, and he was excellent as he played
that role.
That was his role in the movie, was UN Washington, yeah.
And he got in there, but he also was in the Guns of the Magnificent Sevens, which was a playoff of the original Magnificent Seven with Jim Brown. He was in the one I like most is Brian's Song.
Great movie
about Brian Piccolo with the Chicago Bears, contracted cancer. Well, J.C. Caroline was the captain of that team, an Illinois former player, a running back. Was the co-captain of that team, and Bernie played J.C. Caroline. And the one that you might remember is Maurice Stokes.
Yep.
He played the lead role. He was Maurice Stokes. Jack Twyman was a player with Maurice Stokes. He had a stroke and was paralyzed, and Jack Twyman took him under his wing and mentored him and was with him for the last 5 or 6 years of his life. And in that movie told that. He was in with Burt Reynolds. Who was the other one you mentioned?
He was in Under Siege, which is with Steven Seagal. That's another movie that he was in.
But he played in so many different things. But the story of how he got to Bowling Green is fascinating for me. We had two players from Columbus East. One of them was Chuck Comer. He was an All-Ohio running back. He was in the North-South All-Ohio game, which was so prestigious in those days. I mean, to make that, you had to really be an outstanding player. Chuck was a running back on there. And in high school, he befriended Bernie, who was not much of an athlete at all. Had no real resume as a football player. In fact, he was just a player on the high school football team. I'm not sure he even started there because he was so small and he had, you know, some of these problems. But Chuck befriended him, and he could run. Now, they knew he could run. I mean, in track, he was outstanding, but he just was not a football player. And Chuck persuaded Dwight Perry that there's something about this guy that you need, we need to have. And Dwight gave him a full scholarship.
Wow.
Brought him up to Bowling Green as a football. When no one else recruited him. No one offered him a nickel. So he came, and once they got the infection taken care of, he was a square-shouldered guy. I mean, he was big and could run, and All-American, led us to the national championship, one of our outstanding running backs in 1959. And then in 1960, as I mentioned, he's captain. But at Bowling Green, he wasn't just an athlete. He was a student. And the art department, the director of the art program, and he got him into art. And he became a painter. I mean, an outstanding painter. And if you look it up, you'll see a lot of work that he's done as an artist. And he was also a poet. And it wasn't roses are red, violets are blue, Bowling Green is for you. It wasn't that kind of poetry.
That was well done, Jack.
It was more advanced than that. And then he became – his work sold. I mean, he became a speaker. I mean, just an outstanding guy. And the story that I like to tell is we were in communication maybe 5, 6, 7 times. We had a chance to talk. We met a couple times at reunions. But we weren't that close. But when John and Jim went to the Super Bowl – I got a letter from Bernie, and it was – I still have it. I have it – I don't have it – I have it – I have it – I know where I can get it. It's in a frame book. And it was the most interesting letter that I've ever had sent to me in my entire life. And the letter – I can only paraphrase it because I don't have it here. It was two paragraphs. The first paragraph was Bernie Casey, the artist, the poet. I mean, the words were so craftily shaped. I mean, they were all in the right place, and it had meaning to it and emotion to it, as if you were writing a book. And I thought to myself, wow, Bernie Casey. Then the next paragraph went to Bernie Casey in 1957. The language was the way we sometimes spoke, locker room type talk. And the entire second paragraph was phrased that way. I said, this guy is an absolute genius to be able to go from this mode to this mode in one letter. But he was very congratulatory about John and Jim, and he had remembered them from a time that he had met him. So he passed away here a couple of years ago. But the memories for Jackie and me that were brought back with that movie. So there's a lot of movies you can go back to see this guy, but a dear, dear friend and a teammate.
He was also,
and I will say this. Go ahead.
I was going to say he was also the principal. I think it was the principal in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He was in a James Bond movie, Never Say Never Again, which I've seen like 1,000 times. So he's really good in that as well. Yeah, he's got a lot of credits to his name. Bernie Casey, for those looking him up online.
So I will say this. Saturday at Bowling Green is the 100th anniversary of football at Bowling Green State University. And I point out, 60 years ago, 1959, if I'm not mistaken, Bowling Green State University won national championship. Small college, 1AA national championship. So about 24 of those living players, hopefully they all are able to make it back. But I'll guarantee you, Bernie Casey's name will be mentioned, and Bernie Casey, and then will come a smile and some fantastic recollections of a teammate who went on to do other things. And I say as I close, and now you know the rest of the story.
You can contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast or by using hashtag Jack Talk. Follow us, favorite us, and subscribe to us on PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We want to thank Podcast One, our guest coach Mel Pearson, and our sponsors Lewis Jewelers, Butcher Box, and Prime Video. Have a great week, everybody, and keep attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.